Hello, Audio Boo. Graham here, Black 73 Cat. Hope you're all well, guys. It's Tuesday, the 5th of May, 2015, and it's about 4:30 in the PM. How are we all? It's been a while since I've recorded. Actually, no, it's not a while since I've recorded anything. It's a while since I've posted anything, or published anything, whatever you want to call it, because essentially every time I've tried to record, I've just ended up in a coughing, spluttering, croaky-voiced, slobbery mess. I've had a cold. I've still got a cold. I'm currently, you'll hear the sound of running water. I'm currently pouring myself a drink in anticipation of my cough coming back with a vengeance during this recording, which will not be very pleasant. If I feel like I'm about to cough, I will probably pause the recording to spare your delicate ears from the sounds of me hacking away. because I'm good like that. So anyway, what have I got to tell you? What's been happening in the last week and a half? I guess most important thing is my new camera has arrived. Yay! It's here. I have it. It's in my hands. Well, it's not in my hands right now because I'm doing housely chores, but it has been in my hands. And it is a thing of loveliness. Although it's a thing of loveliness, but it's a thing of loveliness that is very, very baffling. It's very different from anything I've used before, you know. Excuse me. I had to have a drink to avert coughage. It's very different from anything I've used before. Not only the sort of the functionality, but the actual position, because it's quite small. It is very small in comparison to a DSLR. The buttons aren't in the right sort of place for my fingers and that kind of thing. When I say in the right place, I mean in the expected place where I'm used to sort of having them for the last 10, well, last pretty much all my life. You know, I've had an SLR since I was like 11 years old, really. So suddenly switching down to a compact is quite weird. And it's going to take an awful long time to get used to, I think. Well, it certainly feels that way at the minute. But I'm not complaining at all. I'm not complaining. It's a big shift. And I'm very comfortable. I'm very pleased that I've made the shift because I can see the potential of the camera already. Even though I haven't had really that much opportunity to put it to good use, but it's very, very nice and so customizable. I mean, the menus are just baffling, really, with how much you can adjust and change and tailor to your exact needs. It's quite amazing, really. Essentially, I think I'm right in saying every button, I think, if not almost every button, can be reprogrammed and remapped to do whatever you want it to do. It's pretty amazing. There are two custom function buttons on it, which you can sort of, you know, on the face of it, you can say, right, okay, I want custom button one to do this, custom button two to do this. But when you look into the menus, actually any button, no matter what it's labeled on the back of the camera, you can change its function to do whatever you want to do. So depending on how you use the camera and your style of photography, etc., once you know what you're doing with it, you can sort of have everything at quick access just at the press of a button without going into the menus. It's incredible. It really is. But as many of you who have listened to me for a long time will know, I'm a bit of a doofus when it comes to all this techie type stuff. So it's going to take a little while to get it all untangled from around my neck because... it's quite baffling. It's quite baffling. But I took it out yesterday just for a little a short walk with the family. Not really an ideal opportunity to or time to try and learn how to use a new camera when I've got the family in tow. Really, I just need to be either on my own or with other like-minded individuals who don't think I'm abnormal for sitting in one place for 20 minutes with my eyes stuck to a little box of black plastic and metal, because I need time just to be able to sit still and just practice and experiment and get a feel for how it all works and how everything's adjusted and changed on the fly and stuff. But it's a pleasure to use once I get used to where the buttons are. I can see me and this camera having a long and happy relationship, because it's so much smaller. It's still quite solid and robust, but it's so much smaller than the DSLR with that whacking great lens that I had on the front. And it feels so much better just to be walking around with something so small and relatively lightweight, you know? Much less intrusive as well. Although I did feel a bit, it's kind of weird. I was seeing other people walking around with, you know, DSLRs with, you know, similar sort of lenses to what I was using a month ago. And I did sort of, I feel a little bit sort of inadequate. It was weird. I was just kind of like, you know, I don't know, it still doesn't feel right that I no longer have a DSLR, but I know that it's the right thing. I know I've made that move at the right time, watch the future. The mirrorless revolution is coming. It has started. It has taken America by storm. Many, many, many American pros are shifting over to mirrorless now, publicly, very publicly. And it's coming, it's coming. And once it comes here, mirrorless will be the next big thing in photography in the UK. That's my prediction, and I reckon it's a good one. Anyway, so it's been good to have a bit of a play around and to have something new and just shiny and nice and stuff. And the delivery was good from Hong Kong, came within a week, which I thought was really good. It was a day later than they predicted when I ordered, but you know, still under 7 days to get to me from Hong Kong, and that was because it was held up at customs for a short while, apparently, according to the shop. But I didn't incur any charges. It arrived all intact, although I did panic a little bit because when the guy delivered it, it was from DPD, the fantastic DPD parcel service. They are brilliant. I've never had a problem with them. And he arrived, but they give you a sort of they give you an hour time slot, and he was, I think, 2 minutes early. And they're not allowed to deliver early. They have to deliver within the time slot, which is kind of enviable, but a little bit daft as well, really, if I'm standing on the doorstep. But he couldn't actually process the delivery until the timer had ticked over to 44 minutes past two or whatever he'd quoted. So, excuse me, drinking and talking, it's not good. It is only squash, so I'm not going to be slurring my words. He had to stand there for a minute or two, so we're killing time. And he was saying, "Oh, what is it like?" "Oh, so it's a new camera. So I bought it from Hong Kong." And as I was talking to him, I had it in my hands. And as I tipped the box, I heard this clunk, clunk, clunk. Oh, my word, what's that? And it really sounded heavy and loose inside the box, you know? So I kind of gave it a little shake and I could hear something else rattling. I thought, "Oh, no, what's going on here?" And he said, "You can open it here while I'm standing here if you want." He said, "I don't mind waiting if you want to check it." And I said, "Nah." I said, "Ultimately, it doesn't make any difference. I'll just video myself on opening it or something. I'm not going to do an unboxing video. I'm not going to do one of those. But I'll just video myself and open it, you know, so I can. I've got some proof, sort of thing." But I was worried. You know, he went away, and I was shaking. It's going rattle, rattle, rattle. And then when I tipped it, it was going shklunk, shklunk. Something was big and heavy and loose inside. And I thought, "Oh, no, 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 no." And of course, that viral video has been circulating around Facebook and stuff, hasn't it? Where the baggage handlers slinging bags off the walls and stuff as they're launching them out of the baggage carts and stuff. And I was like, "Oh, no, this is... Oh. Now, it's all gone wrong at the last hurdle." But when I opened the box, all was good. It was just the user manuals. Because it's obviously for the multi-regional market, it's got about six user manuals in the top and then six little flyers to advertise a photo processing software. I'll come to that in a minute, actually. A couple of other little leaflets and stuff, you know, as the usual stuff that you get in these kind of boxes. And they were all just sitting in the compartment in the top of the box, just sliding backwards and forwards, but as one sort of amorphous mass, so they were like thump, thump, thump. But also, the thing that was rattling around was just I can't remember what it was now, It was a little. It was the USB lead or something was loose in the box because, of course, the crazy regulations don't allow you to ship a battery these days. So what they have to do before they ship it is actually open the box, take the camera out, take the battery and the camera out of the packaging, fit the battery to the camera, reseal it, and then ship it. Which my OCD doesn't like because I like shiny new stuff that no one's touched before. Well, at least not since it left the production line, you know. Sorry, did I just cough? I did, didn't I? Sorry. It was kind of strange to open something new that I knew somebody else had already had the hands on. Kind of, oh, it wasn't quite as... But no, it's fine. It's all good. It's all good. I've got it and it's in one piece and that's all that matters. So yeah, I'm very impressed with Digital Rev so far. I have no complaints. Oh, no complaints at all. The communication could be a bit better, you know, a bit slack on the old keeping up to date with what's happening. But they responded quick enough when I emailed them or tweeted them with questions. I got responses pretty much straight away, so I can't really fault them, to be honest. It was just the comms could be a bit more proactive, I guess, but certainly nothing to worry about. So yes, I see no reason why I wouldn't buy from them again in the future. So anyway, so I'm just looking forward to having a good play with it now. What was I going to talk about? Oh, yes. Something that occurred to me yesterday. I heard somebody else saying it yesterday when I was out and about. And that, excuse me. And I've heard quite a few people say it over the last few weeks while I've been going in and out of all these camera shops and hanging around camera stands looking very sheepish and testing this and pressing that and tweaking this and feeling this. And I've heard lots of people talking, you know, as they're looking at cameras themselves. Excuse me, just a drink. Oh, excuse me, sorry. Usually the older generation, slightly older generation, and you hear them say, oh, well, of course, it's all digital nowadays, isn't it? All this digital stuff and all this Photoshop stuff, why you just can't have a normal picture anymore without being messed around with, I don't know. And that always makes me chuckle. Because I don't think that people realise that there has never been such a thing as an unprocessed image. Every single photograph that you have ever laid your eyes on, whether it be on film or slide or digital or print or every single image you have ever seen in your life has been processed in some way. There is no such thing as a natural image. It just does not and cannot exist. Full stop. It's impossible. There is no such thing as an unprocessed image. Do you believe me? I can probably detect some of you are shaking your head going, what rot is he talking? Of course there is. I used to take a film on my old Pentax 35mm film camera and send it off to Boots, and Boots would send me back some lovely pictures. No messing around, all straight as a die. I had to get everything right in my camera. You did. And you had to make sure all your aperture and your shutter speed and your... everything else was all set to make sure that you got the best possible image. But how did the image come from being just light, in the lightness, to being a photograph in your hand? Was it not processed? Of course it was. It had, well, for a start, the type of film that you bought made a difference because not all films were created equal. So therefore, you could buy one particular type of film that would have a different impact on the quality of or the appearance of your final image. So some films would give more heavily saturated colours. Others would give more contrast. Others would put film grain into it. Others would be especially for shooting in low light. So the type of film that you chose to put in your old film camera had an effect on how the final image looked. So there it's processed straight away. It's from the word off. It's not a natural image. Immediately that light hits the film, it was processed in some way. Okay? Then, of course, it had to go through several chemical processes to get the film to turn into a negative, and then the photo to develop and be fixed. And that was using different types of chemicals from different manufacturers, which obviously had an effect on how the final image looked. Then, of course, there was a type of paper that it was printed on, which had an effect on how the image looked. Some would boost contrast, some would give richer colours, some would give a different luster to the image. All kinds of things would happen, and I'm hiccuping again now. And then you've got to bear in mind that when you sent your film to Boots, what happened? It wasn't witchcraft. They had to be processed, and they had to be processed using the same chemicals and the darkroom techniques. And as well, and when you're talking colour images, well, of course, colour images had to go through the lab machine, or in the early days of photography, were processed by people in white coats who sat over enlargers and you know, did it all manually. But they had to set the colours. They had to set what colours were finally came out on that paper. It wasn't just a simple process. Things had to be adjusted and set to sort of mean averages in order to make that image appear in the colours to be right. It wasn't just as simple as shining a light through a negative onto a piece of paper. There were lots of things that had to go into processing. Now, I used to be very fortunate. When I was about 11 years old, I was given my first SLR by my dad when he bought a new one. He gave me his old fully manual one, and he bought a Minolta 7000, which was the first ever autofocus SLR and it to be on sale in the UK. And my dad had one. It was gorgeous. I've still got it in the garage. It's a beautiful piece of kit. But anyway, from a very young age, my dad, we used to do his own developing and printing, and I used to do a bit with him. I learned how to print and develop and print my own black and white images. We used to have a dark room. Well, we didn't. We had a kitchen, but we had special shutters made up that would fit into the window, block out all the light. We had a big blackout curtain to drop out over the door. We had the safe lamp and all the rest of it, and we used to convert our kitchen into a dark room. And we had the only ever did black and white. We never did colour. We only ever did black and white because it was pretty simple. But I understand how darkroom techniques worked, and we could affect how the final image looked. We could adjust the exposure time on the enlarger, or we could dodge and burn by waving a little bit of cardboard or a pen lid or something in the light over the clouds in the sky, perhaps, to boost contrast and adjust the exposure time of a small part of the image and that kind of thing. It was all processed. And the same process was done on a much bigger scale when you sent off things to Happy Snaps and Boots and that kind of thing to get processed. They were just done to a set of averages. You know, the machines or the enlarger, everything were preset to add to average blue, average green, average red, whatever, average contrast, average exposure, average brightness. And they would just be put through in a batch, which is why when you got a roll of film processed and you got your images back from TruePrint a week later, they all looked pretty much the same. The colours all looked the same. They weren't necessarily the same when you were standing there. You know, you have an image from, I don't know, some gardens that you're walking around one day, and the greens will be the same colour as the green trees that were on the beach, that were next to the beach you were on the day after. Well, like, clearly that wasn't the case in real life, but it was just the machines were preset to all these sort of generic colours and generic contrasts, etc., etc. It was processed. They were processed. The only difference these days is it's not done chemically and physically, it's done digitally. And whoever preset all of the machines and stuff that you used to see in the back of Boots when you used to take your prints down there and you used to watch that big long machine, and they would feed the film in at one end and then all your prints would come out at the other end. And if you stood by the window, you could watch them dropping out, and used to stand there for ages eating a McDonald's waiting for some naughty beach pics to drop out, or sort of just any beach pics at a certain age. But you know what I mean? That process was all done in this machine. Well, that's now done. There's the same sort of type of boffins that program those big machines in the back of Boots to work to a set of presets have now done the same using algorithms to put into the computer that's inside your calculator. Very complex mathematical equations to decide how blue the sky should be, how green the grass should be, how yellow that man's coat in the bottom right-hand corner of the image should be. They're all presets. They're all averages. All that happens is your shutter opens and the light hits the sensor. Now, the sensor can be very, very different, just as films could be very, very different. So immediately as that light hits the sensor, it depends how good that sensor is and how that sensor converts the light into data makes a big difference, okay? So all that sensor does is take the light and convert that light into data. It's just data. It's just ones and zeros. There's nothing there other than ones and zeros. It has to be processed. It has to go through some sort of process, the same as your film was useless until it was turned into a negative, and then in turn until it was put through an enlarger and printed onto paper. So you've got all this data sitting there. Now, when you take a JPEG image with your camera, i.e. when you just have your camera on the basic presets or on a fully automatic mode and you're shooting in JPEG mode, you press the shutter, the light hits the sensor, okay? The light is converted into data. Then the algorithms inside the computer of the camera get to work. Now, bear in mind that if I'm standing on top of Kinder Scout taking a picture, I know exactly what colour that heather should be. I know exactly what colour that grass should be. I know exactly what how blue the sky was and how much contrast there was in the clouds. The person who made the algorithm to process that image for me has never been to Kinder Scout, probably. He probably lives in Tokyo and he's working in a lab somewhere. Now then, the reason that that's important is because the algorithms go to work and they process the image for you. They take that data and they convert the series of ones and zeros that it recognizes as blue, and it processes it to blue and changes that to green and changes that to yellow and that to red. And then it gives you an image, and it sort of works the presets for the contrast and the brightness and all that out. It works. It's very, very clever stuff. And most of the time it will give you a fairly decent image. But once that's done, there's still a load of data left over. Okay, loads of data, which could be used to make deeper adjustments and change that blue a little bit and change that green a little bit and change the contrast in the clouds a little bit. All that data's there, but the camera's already processed it. The camera has made your image just as TruePrint made your image all those years ago. So any of the data that's left, it could be used to make further adjustment, just gets instantly deleted. Gone, poof, into the ether, never to be seen again. It's gone. It's gone. The camera doesn't want it. The camera thinks you don't need it anymore, so it just gets rid of it. And then you're left with a JPEG. Once that JPEG is formed, that's it. You've got no control. So you could take the shot of your lifetime, the best photograph you've ever taken, whether it be of a bird in flight or a racing car just about to crash or of a beautiful sunrise or something like that, and you press your camera shutter, click, and take a JPEG. That is it. That's it. If that JPEG doesn't come out to your liking, there's nothing you can do, or very little you can do about it. You can play around with it slightly in editing software, but it's already had most of its data stripped out of it. So any manipulation you make on that JPEG image is going to start to degrade it, and it's going to start to degrade it quickly. So yes, you might be able to change the colours a little bit, but the image is going to lose quality and it's going to lose resolution because you're playing around with it, an already compressed image. Now, I shoot in RAW, okay, which is basically what it says. It's raw data. It's a raw image. Now, my shutter opens, takes in all the light. The light's converted to data, and that's it. Nothing else happens to it. The camera doesn't do a damn thing to it. I have to get my settings right. I have to get my shutter speed right. I have to get my ISO right. I have to get my aperture right. I have to get everything right in camera. I press the shutter, the light hits the sensor, it's converted to data, and that is it. Nothing else happens with that image until I transfer it. Well, I can do it to my phone now, but realistically, into a computer. And then it has to go through something called a converter, a raw converter, which basically turns that data, opens it up, and turns it into a picture. Now, that picture will probably, most of the time when you're shooting raw, will probably be quite flat and boring. It needs to be processed, just the same as your negative needed to be processed in Happy Snaps or TruePrint or in my dad's darkroom in the kitchen. It all needs processing. The only difference is, and I can prove this quite simply, with a RAW file, you've got so much more data to play with. So therefore, if you take the shot of a lifetime and you're shooting in RAW, you can process 10, 15, 20, 30, as many versions of that image as you want. You can just process so many different copies of that image in different ways till it looks just perfect and exactly how you want it. Now, if you want it to look exactly as it was on the day, how it is in your mind's eye, and how you remember it, then that's fine. You can do that using a raw image. You aren't relying on some boffin in a lab in Tokyo who's never been to Kinder Scout and seen that sunrise to do it for you. You're doing it for yourself. And if you want to get all arty and over-process it and make it look a bit sort of different and you know, sort of arty rather than just a record shot, take a look at my Flickr feed, Black 73 Cat on Flickr. You'll see I love playing with stuff and trying to make them all arty and stuff. excuse me. But I decide, because I do all the processing in Photoshop or Lightroom, which is very similar to Photoshop. The only difference is I'm doing the processing. I decide how bright it is. I decide how much contrast there is. I decide how much colour there is. I decide how the picture looks in the overall. Because I was there. I was there when I took the photograph. It wasn't done by some boffin in a lab in the back of Boots or some boffin in a lab in Tokyo who's put a bit of software into my camera to tell it what colour blue should be or how blue should be. Do you see what I mean? So people who sort of jump down on this, oh, I don't use Photoshop, just take natural images. What, natural images by using a JPEG? So basically someone else is doing the Photoshopping for you, because that's all that's happening. When you take a JPEG, little Photoshop bots are inside your computer, inside your phone, your camera going snap, 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 snap. Ooh, we'll paint that blue, we'll boost the contrast here. It's little Photoshop bots inside your camera that are doing it all, instead of you doing it on your computer or instead of boffin doing it. It's still being processed. It's still being processed in Photoshop or something very similar to Photoshop. It's just the software is carried on board inside your camera. Trust me, you've never seen a natural image. You've never seen an unprocessed image. It is a physical impossibility. Even a RAW file will not be a natural image, because it's RAW data. It needs processing. It needs enhancing to make it look like it actually did. Because, excuse me, I said I was going to demonstrate, didn't I? If you have a camera that is capable of shooting RAW, okay, and usually we'll find that in the quality settings, and it's not just DSLRs and mirrorless CSAs. Many compacts will shoot in RAW now. If you look in the quality and select the quality, you'll see you've probably got two or three qualities of JPEG, up to fine being the highest or high quality, and sometimes you'll have something called RAW, R-A-W. Now then, if you leave your camera set to JPEG fine, the highest quality JPEG, and have a look at how many shots your memory card can take. So you have a look in the back and might say, right, you can take 500 shots before your memory card's full. And you go, okay, that's good, 500 photographs. And then switch your quality to RAW. And then check that number. And you'll probably find it's gone down to 200, maybe even less, maybe even a lot less. Because RAW files are huge amounts of data. And all of the data that hits, all of the light that is converted to data from that sensor is kept. It's kept for you to do what you want with. None of it is discarded. You keep every single bit of it. That's your data. That's your data. You have taken that light and put it onto that sensor for you. And it should, in my opinion, it should be down to you to decide what happens to it. Now, obviously, that means you're going to have to learn how to process your photos. So, by all means, rely on the JPEGs. Rely on the boffins in the labs in Tokyo to tell your camera how they should think, how blue that blue sky should be. But bear in mind that you're being robbed. You're having probably 3/4 of the data that you've captured taken off you and just thrown away. And you've got no choice. You've got no choice over what's taken and what's left behind. And if ever you do capture that shot of a lifetime, but it might just be slightly too dark or slightly too bright, or this colour saturation might be just a little bit off, or it might just need a tiny bit of sharpener or a little boost of contrast that you can't do because the image is going to degrade because you've taken a JPEG. That's when the benefits of RAW, shooting RAW, come out. But if I'm capturing data, I want to keep my data. I'll decide what happens to it. I'll decide what I discard. I'll decide how it's processed, not some boffin in a lab. Okay? And yes, we can go over the board and we can shave off pounds in weight from supermodels and airbrush out spots and moles and all kinds of stuff and change hair color, and we can do all of that stuff. We can do all of that, but that's always been able to be done. Well, to some degree. The term airbrushing, that's not a true term anymore. Now it's digitally enhanced or digitally remastered or whatever you want to call it. Airbrushing, as in the truest sense of it, comes from the film and paper days, when literally you would have somebody with an airbrush blowing paint onto a photograph to get rid of blemishes. That's where the term airbrushing comes from. It's been going on for many, many years before digital photography arrived. But yeah, everybody has this big downer on Photoshop. Ooh, if you use Photoshop, you're not a proper photographer. You should be able to get it right in camera. I still have to get all my settings right. I can't just go, oh, I'll just point the camera and just press the button and the Photoshop will do the rest. It doesn't. I still need to get everything set up properly in the camera. Otherwise, it's going to look like a bag of spanners when it goes into Lightroom. And no amount of digital enhancing is going to make it into a decent image. I still have to work. I still have to understand the basic principles of photography in order for it to get a good photograph. I just choose to process it myself instead of letting the boffins, the white-coated, wearing labby-type people do it. I do it. I do the processing. There you go. Oh, my first audio boo in a week, and it turned into a rant. Almost. A rant? A lecture, perhaps? I don't know. I hope it's interesting, though. I hope some of you, because you see, like Instagram, and people, like, I saw it this morning. I can't remember who was it now? Somebody Instagram, somebody had been out in Scotland or something. And one of the hashtags that he put on his Instagram was hashtag no filter. And I was like, right? So what's that mean? No filter. You've just taken an image on your phone, or you've taken a JPEG that's been heavily processed already. So the fact that you're bragging about not putting any effect on it afterwards is really a moot point, because the image has already been processed. You might not think it has, but it has. It's already had massive amounts of manipulation done to it before you've even seen it. So bragging that you haven't put any more manipulation on isn't really all that much of a clever thing to be saying. Because, yes, somebody else has done it all for you. Me personally, I like to create photography, and I like to try. I'm not very good, but I like to try and turn my photography into art. Hence, I use an awful lot of post-processing. I use a lot of manipulation. And I prefer to try and enhance my images in that way to make them just a little bit different. If you, again, look at my Flickr feed, Black73 Cat on Flickr. You'll see all kinds of weird and wonderful stuff on there. Some of it works, some of it doesn't. I'm not 100% happy with everything that's on there, but will I take it down? I don't think so, because it's a catalogue of my photography, and I look at something, I go, okay, if I was going to take an image similar to that again, I wouldn't do it that way. Or I will look at an image, there's one on my Flickr feed, which is a piece of orange string on a gatepost. In fact, I think I called it orange string. And it's just a piece of orange string tied around a gatepost, a bit of baler twine. We were on the edge of a farmyard. We'd been out in the Peak District for the day. The cloud was down. It had been raining all day. We'd been out on a photography walk, and we got to this farm at the bottom of a hill. And there was like a little stone hut on the edge of the farm, which was like a walker's shelter. And we went in there and we're sitting there, we're just chatting away and stuff, while I was standing by the doorway. And I just looked out across the farmyard, across the track in front of us. And I saw this piece of baler twine, this orange baler twine wrapped around, tied around a fence post. And I just looked at it, and it took me about 5 seconds. And I thought, I know exactly what I want to do with that. And that image that you see on my Flickr feed of the orange string with the heavily monochromed and out of focus background and the bright orange string, I knew exactly what I wanted to do. Before I even pressed the shutter, I knew how I was going to process that. I knew how I was going to process it. I could see the image already before I'd even taken the shot. On the other side of the coin, there's another image on my Flickr feed. I'm going on a bit here, but which is the back end of a Karmann Ghia car, a lovely car from the 60s. Beautiful, beautiful beast. And it's just the badge. It just says Karmann Ghia, I think, on the back. And I've done a kind of a soft focus sort of monochrome effect on that. Now, I think that car was orange, if I remember rightly. And it was. I've got the original negative, you see, because I've got a RAW file, so I can redo it if I wanted to in a different way. But I didn't know what I was going to do with that, but I knew there was an image there somewhere. So I just took a load of images, all different compositions, because composition to me, composition, sharpness, and depth of field are the three priorities when I'm shooting. And I played around and got all different compositions and different ways of shooting that particular badge and that particular back end of the car. And I knew I could do something with it, but I didn't know what. I didn't know what I was going to be able to do until I got it back. And I sat there for probably 2 hours in post-processing, in Lightroom, just playing with it and manipulating it and changing this and restarting and changing this and trying this and restarting, boosting colors, monochroming it, contrasting it. And I just could not decide how I wanted to do it. I couldn't get it right. Excuse me. So I left it alone and I walked away. And about an hour later, I was doing some housely chores, as I do. And I remembered watching a video from a chap on YouTube called Gavin Hoey, who does tutorials and stuff. And he had done a tutorial a week or so previous, or I'd watched one of his tutorials, which was creating a pseudo-infrared effect, as if using an infrared filter or an infrared camera, sort of inverts everything almost into negative. And I remembered watching this video, and I didn't want to do an infrared effect, but there was one element that he'd used within the process of doing so which stuck in my head, and it was the complete opposite to how I normally process an image. And suddenly I thought, I wonder if I do that, if anybody's interested. It was the clarity slider. Normally, I would push the clarity slider quite far over to the right because it puts minute amounts of sharpness in and brings out loads of lovely texture and lovely detail and contrast. But when Gavin did this particular shot, he slid the clarity slider right away over to the left, which does the exact opposite and gives a sort of soft focus effect. And suddenly, in my head, I knew what I wanted to do. So the image wasn't right from the start. There was the image was good, don't get me wrong, but the processing wasn't how I wanted it. I could have just put a picture of the badge up, you know, of the lovely back of the, I mean, the car's beautiful as it was, it didn't really need anything doing. But then it was just a picture of the badge on the back of a car. It's just a record shot. It's not really art, as far as I see it. Obviously, art is very objective, subjective. Objective, perhaps, I don't know, whatever. Some people like it, some people don't. I like it, hey, whatever. So yes, but that's my point. I decide how that final image looks. Not my camera, not some boffin in a lab in boots, not some boffin in a lab in Tokyo. I decide. That's why I love Photoshop and Lightroom and post-processing. Lightroom is very, very similar to Photoshop, by the way. It's more of like a stripped-down version, but hey. Anyway, here endeth the lesson. I'm going to boil up some pasta for my boy's tea, and then I'm going to hopefully play around with some of my images from yesterday and just see if I can get anything out of them in post-processing. You know, Photoshop malarkey. Anyway, thanks for listening to me, guys. I know I've waffled on a bit, but in fairness, I haven't posted for a week, and that was about due a rant. Take care. I'll speak to you all soon. Hope you're well. Hope you're happy. Bye for now.